At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is happening, gang? We are jacked about this edition of the Inside Football Podcast. You know who's probably the most jacked about this one? One Mr. Rick Schaefer, because we are staying in his home division today, and we are going through the AFC North. This is really a fun one, because this, in a lot of ways, is a division kind of in flux. The bottom-dwelling teams for so long are kind of a little bit on the rise, and the Browns may very well be the best team in this division after you hear Bill's breakdown. So this truly is kind of a unique look at a division that's very much in flux in terms of what the Ravens might be, what is the path forward for the Steelers, how good can the Browns be? Are they legitimately a Super Bowl contender? And has Cincinnati done anything this offseason that can make them be a team on the come? So get ready for this one. But before we do, I wanted to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the show, BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place bets. And best of all, it's free to sign up. So what are you waiting for? Head over to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's right, 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. There is a lot of great action in terms of sports betting. It's almost as good as meme stocks. So what are you waiting for? Head over to betonline.ag and sign up today. All right, gang, we are ready. It's time for the AFC North on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. Buckle up. This is a fun one. All right. Even though I was accused in the pre-show meeting of looking like Johnny Cash today with no hair, we are live on the Inside Football Podcast.
You need a cowboy hat to look like Johnny Cash today.
Yeah. I at the other house, I feel like we have it ready. How we doing today, guys?
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. We're in there. We're surviving the cicadas. The pollen's a little heavy, but, you know, we're getting by.
All right, where our tour of the NFL has landed in Rick's home division of the AFC North. Where are we starting today, Rick?
Well, Scott, we are going to start in my hometown, Baltimore, Maryland, with the Ravens. So, as you'll remember, last year the Ravens went 11-5, finishing just behind the Steelers in the regular season. Their offense ranked 9th in the league, averaging 27.3 points a game. When you combined the passing and ground game attacks, they were at 10th at 5.8 average. Passing, they didn't do well in terms of the average yards per attempt, 6.6, but they were first in a remarkable number in terms of average yards per rush of 5.6 yards per rush. And they were tied for 18th, giving up 2.3 sacks a game. On the defensive side of the ball, they were ranked 1 in the league for the least average points per game, given up of 18.5. They were 6th in combined yards at 317. They were 2nd in passing yards allowed at 5.9 average. In rushing, they were 11th at 4.3. They finished 14th, averaging 2.3 sacks a game. when you put that together, they were second, Bill, in the league overall in point differential at plus 8.8, and they were tied for 11th and 0.2 positive turnovers per game. So a few weaknesses, a lot of strengths. What, giving your take on last year's team and then what happened?
Well, last year is last year. They advanced in the playoffs one game, and then came a cropper, which has been their MO with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. And this offense, which is unique, but has difficulty generating pass offense. If you listen to the pundits, it's because they don't have any receivers. I'm not sure I agree with that, but they tried to do something about that this year. And we'll see what happens. And a lot of, I think you'll answer a lot of questions this year relative to Lamar Jackson and his future in Baltimore. Let's look at who they lost, because they had some significant losses. The most significant one was Matthew Judon, outside linebacker. Now, he's 29 years of age, so I don't know how much you want to invest in him in the long run. He went to New England for a four-year deal with $32 million guaranteed. So that's a fairly large guarantee for a guy who's 29. They'll likely get three solid years out of him. But New England had no other rushers, so they had to make this move. Yannick Ngakoue, who they traded for during the season, Yannick was on the AAA frequent flyer routine last year. I think he played with four different teams, is 26. He went to Las Vegas for a two-year deal with $21 million guaranteed. So that's a pretty hefty commitment to a guy who is really a situational rusher. And I'm fairly certain that Baltimore didn't want to match that. And so both of their number one rushers, if you will, left. Jihad Ward, who's a pretty solid defensive end, went to Jacksonville for $2.5 million guaranteed on a one-year contract. Mark Ingram, who's 32 and had been phased out of the offense, went to Houston for $2.5 million. Matt Skura, who we remember had so much difficulty snapping the ball, went to Miami for a one-year deal. Chris Moore, backup wide receiver, went to Houston for a one-year deal. Morgan Cox, a linebacker who's 35, went to Tennessee on a one-year deal. Willie Snead, who I think they'll miss, pretty solid wide receiver at 29 years of age, went to Las Vegas, surprisingly, on a one-year deal with only $987,000 guaranteed. That was a pretty good pickup, I think, for Las Vegas. He must have worn out his welcome, because I would have thought Baltimore might have kept him. DJ Fluker, who was a solid veteran backup, left to go to Miami on a one-year deal, and Antoine Wesley, a young wide receiver, went to Arizona on a one-year deal. They re-signed Tyus Bowser, who they believe is a better outside linebacker and rusher than Judon, for 4 years at $22 million. Nose tackle Justin Ellis, linebacker L.J. Fort, who's a starter. Safety Anthony Levine, outside linebacker Pernell McPhee, tight end Eric Tomlinson, defensive end Derek Wolfe for 3 years at $12 million. They brought back a significant number of guys, almost all of them on defense. They signed Geno Stone. The most important one was Alejandro Villanueva, 2 years at $14 million. The much traveled and very infrequently playing Sammy Watkins.
Every 4 weeks, Bill.
Every 4 weeks for 1 year at the $5 million. And Kevin Zeitler for 3 years at $22 million. They traded Orlando Brown. They gave him his wish to the Chiefs. Villanueva will replace him at left tackle. And they traded for tight end Josh Oliver from the Jaguars. The draft was interesting. Their first pick was Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. He is a solid Reggie Wayne-like receiver who runs really well after the catch. He runs excellent routes. He has excellent hands. By midseason, he should fit in and be ready to go. And so down the stretch, I'm not sure Lamar Jackson has any excuses now. He's got two guys who can go get the ball, two guys who can run routes and get open, and in Bateman's case, someone who can run with it after the catch. Jason Owe is a Penn Stater who is really on the come. This is a guy who has worlds of ability. He's green as grass, not a lot of football in his background, outstanding athlete, little production at Penn State this year, but so what? What we're banking on is future development. And we'll see what happens. But with the 31st pick, I can't argue with that. With the 94th pick, they go for Ben Cleveland, a solid guard from Georgia. In the third round, they took Brandon Stevens, a pretty solid cornerback from Southern Methodist, and they needed some infusion of young talent there. Tyon Wallace, wide receiver from Oklahoma State, was the fourth pick. Sean Wade, pretty solid corner from Ohio State in the fifth round. Dalen Hayes, they list him as a defensive end. I'm not sure that's where he'll end up playing, but he's a really solid player. He's not special, but he's solid. And Ben Mason is a good, solid blocking tight end from Michigan, which, of course, they can always use. As we all know, but for the record, this is a run first, run second, run third team. They're going to run the football first, last, and always. The passing game is a play-action passing game focused on the tight ends because they run crossing routes into the middle against zones or against man-to-man or sit down against zones, and they get open versus play action. The outside passing game is sorely lacking. Again, pundits claiming that they don't have any wide receivers. We'll find out this year what the case is. People around the league will tell you that Lamar Jackson is a very different quarterback throwing outside the numbers than he is inside with respect to accuracy. Their depth chart, we'll save Jackson for last. He's backed up by Trace McSorley and Tyler Hunley. McSorley does a nice job when he's healthy, but that body is not an NFL body, unfortunately. I hope he doesn't get hurt again, but I wouldn't bet against it. And Tyler Hunley is not as accomplished as McSorley. He has many of the same qualities as Jackson, and he can run, and he's got a big arm. But I don't really know what he is. We didn't see enough of him. So this will be a good battle in the preseason, I think, to see who emerges as the backup quarterback. The running game is sound with J.K. Dobbins, a great second-round draft choice a year ago. Gus Edwards, Justice Hill. This is a solid group. And it needs to be because, as I said, they're run first, run second, run third. The wide receivers are listed as Marquise Brown and Sammy Watkins. As we said, Sammy plays once every fourth week, seemingly. And I don't know how you develop any cohesion with a young quarterback with that much missed time. If he misses time, he's probably not a factor.
Hey, Bill, with that signing, especially at $5 million, that definitely makes you think that something had to have happened with Willie Snead if you could have brought him back on especially that kind of deal, right?
Yes. Yeah. There's something more to that than replacing Willie Snead, who was out there every week giving up his body with Sammy Watkins. I don't quite get that one. Miles Boykin, I think, is coming on. He's a big power receiver outside. you know, he's a development guy, and Devin Duvernay is a speedster, but he's also needs some development. So I think there's no question that Bateman is the key guy here. I mean, Bateman has to come in and play well. He and Marquise Brown have to be the guys outside. They list three wide receivers, by the way. I think you can count on, I'm being facetious here, but I think you can count on the fingers of one hand the number of times they use three wide receivers right. in a game. The tight end is Mark Andrews. He's the man for Lamar. He's an outstanding receiver. He's got great adjustment. He's got really good hands. He runs good routes. He can get open versus man. He's terrific against zones. Nick Boyle is the backup.
Great blocker. Great blocker.
Who is also is a great blocker. That's right. He's a sound and solid blocker. Patrick Ricard is the fullback. He's like a building running out of the backfield. He can block. He can run. He can catch. Who knows what he weighs? Probably over three bills. He's tough to tackle. He fits perfectly with the offense, and he's a combination. He can play fullback. He can play wing back. He can play second tight end or third tight end. So he's got a lot of versatility in that huge body. The offensive line is Ronnie Stanley, who's returning from injury. Ben Cleveland, Bradley Bozeman, Kevin Zeitler, and Alejandro Villanueva. Alejandro Villanueva is one of my favorite players. I just think his story is so marvelous, having been a receiver at West Point and then serving in Iraq and Afghanistan and then coming back and making himself into an offensive lineman with the help of Mike Munchak. And he's exceedingly smart, obviously. And he made the point that, you know, pass protection at his state, at his stage of life, football life, is not his forte any longer. But he doesn't have to do that anymore. All he has to do is put his hand in the ground and knock people on the keister. So I thought it was a great statement and probably partially right, which brings us back to Lamar Jackson. With the ball in his hand, running the ball, whether it be in an option, whether it be a designed quarterback run, whether it be a scramble, whether it be getting loose from rushers, there's nobody quite like him. He can make anybody miss. He's a mismatch for virtually 95% of the league, one-on-one. And as a result, the league has figured out that you don't play him one-on-one. It only takes one defensive coordinator and one veteran player to be embarrassed to figure out that, well, you know, what we thought would work running the alley doesn't quite work against this guy.
Yeah.
So, so much for that. So he creates weak spots in the defense because you basically have to double team him all the time. And so his value is exceedingly high in the run game. And he's a time bomb waiting to go off if he gets loose. There's no two ways about that. He's an instant touchdown if you miss at the line of scrimmage. So he's a headache, a real headache to defense, because you have to do things against him that you don't normally do or practice. And now people who play them in the regular season or perhaps even in the playoffs, certainly in the division, devote time to defending them even now in OTAs. They're walking through Lamar Jackson defenses in OTAs. They're practicing Lamar Jackson defenses in camp, so as to be sure that it isn't completely new when they come up against him. The passing game is a completely different story, and you can capsulize it almost in one sentence. Inside the hash marks, he's accurate. He'll find the open man, which is usually the tight end or a crossing receiver like Willie Snead against man. Outside the hashes, he's not, and down the field, he's not very accurate. He's not as accurate as you'd like him to be. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I've seen Bill over the years. His accuracy has improved somewhat, but as you're pointing out, there's a there is a stark difference, you know, between the hashes or out into the flat, over the middle. And when he tries to throw downfield, like he can obviously he's got a great arm. He can throw the ball, but it just doesn't have, you know, what you'd want for an NFL quarterback to throw somebody open or dot the I or anything like that. It's sort of hit or miss down, you know, when it's a longer pass.
Well, that's well said. You know, outside the hashes, he has difficulty throwing people open, which is what really great. Now, not every NFL quarterback can do that either. I'm not, you know, I want to get into a controversy here, denigrating him. I'm not. I'm just telling you what you see when you watch film. Now, whether that's the fault of the wide receivers, which some talking heads on television continually say, or whether it's just the nature of Lamar's ability to deliver the ball in certain circumstances, we'll find out, because they've added Watkins and Bateman. You presume that will improve the receiving core and those guys will get open down the field and he won't have to throw them open. That's the implicit statement there. So we'll see. We'll see.
Hey, Bill, in your mind, is the offensive line better now with the additions? Or is that a big question mark area?
No, I don't think it's a question mark area. And, you know, Cleveland will be fine. What they ask these guys to do is not difficulty. I mean, Bozeman will snap the ball. Their difficulty last year was getting the ball snapped, really, a lot of it. And because they're in shotgun so much. But no, I think in the end they'll be fine. Villanueva is not a great pass protector at this stage of his career. And he's played left tackle for a long time. He's moving over to the right. That's not as easy, you know, pardon me, that's not as easy as you might think. But the bottom line is, I think, you know, they'll be fine. This team is designed to run the football and it's designed to create double teams and gap schemes and where the offensive linemen just come off the ball and blow you back and a puller comes around the corner. It's not dissimilar to what the Hogs did in the 80s and 90s in Washington. So, you know, they don't ask them to do a lot. Again, pardon me, as long as they're big and strong and powerful, they'll be fine. Zeitler worries me a little because he's got some age on him. But other than that, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think locally here, the major consternation over losses were over Orlando Brown Jr., obviously, and then, as you pointed out, Bill, Matthew Judon, who's a very good ball player. I mean, and he's a tough one to fully replace. You know, what they do is so unusual. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for a coaching staff that has figured out a scheme that fits so well to the talent that it has, rather than, you know, the converse where you try and have to force the guy to do something he just can't do. So I think they'll be fine.
On defense, what they do is unusual. It's the Buddy Ryan, let's cover the wide receivers man-to-man and we're going to blitz everybody else, essentially. And I think the bottom line here is that typically you're going to get a lot of scheme sacks, because if teams either are not familiar with it or don't pick it up, then you're going to get a lot of scheme sacks. You're going to get people running loose to the quarterback. And they make things really difficult on you. You're only going to get maybe a half dozen big plays in a ball game, and you better hit them if you want to win. And you better make field goals if you want to win, because you're going to be in low-scoring games for two reasons. Number one, the offense is going to eat clock time. And secondly, these guys are going to make it hard on you.
Yeah, as we said, number one, again, you know, lowest scoring against. So they stop you.
But the question in my mind is the one that you raised, Scott. Matthew Judon could get sacks on his own, I felt. Now, I haven't talked to the defensive coordinator about this, but he's a friend, but I kind of felt he could get him on his own. And if you have a guy who can get him on his own, that really helps a lot. Because now you don't have to scheme him open all the time. If you get a mismatch, you can take advantage of it and be sound everywhere else. But we'll see. Derek Wolfe, solid left defender, 3-4 defensive end. Brandon Williams, solid nose tackle, gigantic man. Calais Campbell, now he is in the Methuselah class.
Right.
He's, he's you know, one step from Social Security, football Social Security, but still a good player and a great leader. And what they ask him to do, he can do. And Justin Matabuke, I think is how it's pronounced, behind him is, I think, is an up-and-coming player. So there's depth there. Tyus Bowser, they believe, is a solid outside linebacker. That's why they he's the guy, they think. That's why they re-signed him. L.J. Fort and Patrick Queen inside are pretty solid guys. And Pernell McPhee is also in the Methuselah class, but still a pretty solid rusher. Marlon Humphrey is as good a man-to-man corner as there is in the league. Marcus Peters is mistake-prone, but he's also a tremendous instinctive interceptor. So you take the good with the bad. You know, he's the home run hitter who strikes out a lot, but you'll take the strikeouts and live and be happy with the three-run home runs. So that's where he is. The safeties are fine, Chuck Clark and Deshaun Elliott. The backups are really good, Jimmy Smith. I said Sean Wade, I think, will come in and make this team. Tavon Young, Jordan Richards, Anthony Levine, who's a really good special teams player. There's a lot of depth on this defense as well, particularly in the defensive backfield. The kicking game is as good as there is. Justin Tucker, Sam Cook, Devin Duvernay as a returner is dynamite. So they're always reliable until they're not. I don't know. I didn't look up how long Justin's playing, but has played, but he's approaching the Vinatieri position in NFL life. He's certainly, if not an elder statesman, he's a long-serving position leader there. In any event, very solid team. The question in my mind is, offensively, does the passing game improve enough to get them over the hump in the division so that they get a home game? And secondly, does it improve enough so they can advance?
So Justin Tucker's first year, I think, was 2012, and he's still the most accurate kicker in the history of the league.
Well, as kickers go then, he's far from season. He's far from senior citizen status. He's just long serving, so he's got a lot of football ahead of him.
Yeah. All right. Where are we going next, Rick?
All right. We're going to west to Cleveland. We're going to talk about the Browns. The Browns, who finished 11-5, also last year. In total, in offensive side of the ball, they were 13th in points per game. At almost 27 points a game. They were 10th, Bill, on combined yards with an average of 5.8. In their passing game, they averaged 7 yards an attempt, which put them right in the middle of the pack. Rushing against the Polian standard, they exceeded it. They finished tied for 5th with an average of 4.8 yards per rush. And in terms of sacks given up, they were right in the middle of the pack, 16th, giving up 2.2. On the defensive side of the ball, things were not quite as good. In terms of points allowed, they finished 22nd, giving up 26.5 points a game. In combined yards, they were 21st at 374. Passing yards, they were 18th, averaging 6.9. Rushing, they were 11th, falling below your standard at 4.3. And they gave up 2.2 sacks a game. So when you combine those, they came out ranked 15th in differential at minus 0.3. But in turnovers, they did well. They were ranked fifth, and they registered 0.5 turnovers a game on the plus side of the ball.
Okay. First of all, relinquished free agents. There was nobody that left here that I would cause, it would cause me to lose any sleep. Kendall Lamb is a big, powerful tackle who went to Tennessee on a 2-year deal. Terrence Mitchell is a, you know, journeyman corner, 29 years of age, who went to Houston on a 2-year deal.
All these guys basically went to Houston.
Yeah, that's right.
Timmy, the Browns light at the Houston Hotel.
Yeah, Browns South.
Yeah.
Larry Okunjobi, who's a pretty active defensive tackle, went to Cincinnati on a 1-year deal at with $4 million guaranteed. So he got starter money, and he should. Right? He's a starting player. And then the rest, Tevier Thomas, Kevin Johnson, Vincent Taylor, Thomas Taylor, Trey Davis went to Houston. Carl Joseph, who has been a disappointment at safety for them, went to Las Vegas on a 1-year deal. And Tywan Taylor, wide receiver, went to Houston. So they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys go down to Houston. And I say down both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, yes, exactly. 5.
So, you know, nothing of great consequence there. Re-signed Sheldon Day, defensive tackle. They took him instead of Okunjobi. So we'll see how it works out. That simple. Rashard Higgins, 1 year, $2.4 million. Elijah Lee is a backup linebacker. JoJo Natson, Cody Parkey, the kicker, all 1-year deals. The name signing was Jadeveon Clowney, 1 year with a max of $10 million. Jadeveon Clowney hasn't really been on the field for the last 2 years. He has great rush ability. He's the defensive equivalent of the wide receiver who went to Baltimore from Kansas City, Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins. This is the every 4-week division.
Yeah, right? He plays every 4 weeks, and when he does, he plays well. So there you go. Troy Hill.
Hey, Bill, for his injury, is there any advantage to getting to play on a defensive line like that opposite, you know, an elite-level player? Or is that not – that makes absolutely no difference?
No, it doesn't make any difference at all. You know, I don't know whether you play him outside or in. They got him listed as a defensive end. Probably less chance for him to be hurt on the outside. But he's nonetheless – I mean, he's been hurt. That's the bottom line. And I was talking to a guy this morning. We had a long discussion about, you know, when do you take a chance on players like this? I like this. This is a team that's close. They can pass Baltimore if things go right for them. So depending on what these incentives are, I don't know that I'd pay him $10 million even with incentives. But if he led the league in sacks, I guess maybe it's worthwhile. But he's worth taking a chance on. He's worth taking a chance on. The odds are that he won't succeed. But, hey, when you're close, take a chance. This is a rare talent. No doubt playing the talent.
Yeah. And, you know, Bill, it seems to me that that's a good and fair way to go in a guy in this position. Hey, you know, we know you might be great. And if you can, we'll pay you. You'll earn it. And if not, you don't make as much money. So, I mean, I think it's a good deal for both sides.
Yeah, Troy Hill is a pretty solid corner. He got 4 years for $24 million. Malik Jackson is a very solid inside right player against the run. John Johnson got 3 years at 33.7, $24 million guaranteed. A good signing. If they use him properly, this guy's a good player. He can't run, but he can do everything else. Everything else, and he does it well. So just don't match him up against speed tight ends and expect him to cover them. If you use him well and do the things he can do, he's terrific, and he's also smart and a big hitter, and the GM knows it. He knows players. He broke in with us, so I can tell you, he knows what he's looking at. Maybe the first guy that, well, John Dorsey did too. I was going to say, maybe the first two
first
guys
guy
that they've had in the history of the franchise who knew what they were looking at when they looked at tape. Malik McDowell is a good signing as a backup. Tank McKinley is another one-year max, $4 million. He's done zilch in his career after being a high draft choice. Take a chance. What do you got to lose?
Let's see.
What they're trying to do is create what is called a wave defensive line, which is what you need, seven to eight people who can rush the passer. That's what you have to have if you're going to win the Super Bowl, so or get to the Super Bowl. And that's what they're trying to do. That's what we're trying to create. Greg Sinnott, Damian Square, Anthony Walker. Anthony Walker is a really good pickup. He's a one-year, $3.5 million guy, undersized, smart as can be, played in Tampa 2 for Indianapolis, big hitter, really good instincts. I'm betting he's the starting middle linebacker on opening day. Yeah, the guy's a tremendous, tremendous leader and tremendous and instinctive linebacker, but very small. He's going to get knocked around. You don't want him matched up against any of Baltimore's offensive linemen one-on-one. Right.
Or the fullback,
yeah. Right. Isolation, no. No, thank you. Okay, the draft I thought was really pretty good. Greg Newsom, they get a quarterback from a corner from Northwestern who can ostensibly do it all. I mean, he can cover. He will whack you when he tackles. He's really good, instinctive guy. He was hurt a lot at Northwestern. That's the only drawback. I see him as a sound, solid nickelback in the NFL. And at the 26th pick,
it's pretty good.
Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got to stay healthy. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah comes in from Notre Dame with the 52nd pick. In my mind, that's a steal. His nickname is Wu. He too is a do everything player. He can play weak side linebacker in a 3-4. He can play in the box safety in a 3-3-5. He can play inside linebacker on the weak side in a 3-4, so long as you cover him up, so he doesn't have to take people on. And he can actually walk out and cover Gronk one-on-one. He can cover slots one-on-one. He's really a multi-talented player, and he's fast as hell, and he has big-time punch for a guy who's not very big. I'm guessing he's probably 225 at best.
Yeah, he's the scariest hitter, under 225 pounds, walking the face of the earth.
He's got a big-time punch. So I'd say the first two picks were home runs.
How does he slip?
I don't know, honestly. I really don't know. None of the times were bad. There was nothing that I could put my finger on, except people maybe couldn't find a home for him.
Because do you have to scheme? I mean, is he a guy that you're going to have to really think about how to use? Or is he positionless? Is that the problem?
No. If you're playing Tampa 2, he's the will. If you're playing an offshoot of Tampa 2, he's the will. If you're playing Seattle's defense, he's the will. If you're playing a 3-4, now it's harder to find a spot for him. Right. If you're playing a 3-3-5, he's the 5.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a spot.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like is you're going to play a hybrid defense twice a year against Lamar Jackson. Woo, you got him, baby.
let it rip.
Woo, 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 and woo, woo.
Lamar does not want to get hit by that guy.
No.
Now they're going to help him.
Yeah.
But he's going to be the principal guy.
Well, it'll be him against Lamar's avoid.
So, you know, that's his value, particularly in the, when you're playing Lamar twice a year. I think you need to have that player. Anthony Schwartz is a big-time, world-class sprinter. I think he ran 4.23 or something like that.
Yeah, he's like an Olympic-level sprinter.
Yes, who's big. Now, he didn't have a quarterback at Auburn, and there are Auburn fans who will tell you he didn't have an offensive coordinator either, but that's neither here nor there. We'll find out what he can do. He's a work in progress, but there's plenty here to work with. James Hudson is an offensive tackle from the University of Cincinnati. You know, they're loaded on the offensive line, so I'm not sure he isn't a practice squatter. Tommy Togiai is an interesting guy. He's a defensive tackle from Ohio State, drafted in the fourth round. I think this guy will make a run at the team. He's a hard-playing, instinctive guy, and he loves to mix it up. He's fun to watch. Tony Fields, pretty, you know, solid linebacker from West Virginia. Richard LeCount, a safety from Georgia, who had some difficulty in coverage there, but can run. And Demetric Felton is, he's not a wide receiver. They list him as a wide receiver. He was an all-purpose back at UCLA. So he's a Swiss Army knife too, like Wu is. He might be the third down back. He might be a return guy. With the sixth round pick, I thought this was an interesting and a good pick. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the team.
This is going to be a tough team to make.
It is going to be a tough team to make, yes. This is a team to scout heavily because they're going to put some people on the street that at the cut to 53 that other people can claim. they had no retirements. Their offense is interesting. We'll save Baker Mayfield for last. I think the running back combination of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt is the best in the league. I think it's the best running game in the league. And I think as long as they stay with that and run the football and make that their signature, they're going to be in the hunt all the way. They've got to resist the idea of throwing it up on every down. They got to just, you know, if you're 14 points down, don't worry about it. 17 points down, don't worry about it. Hand the ball to Nick and hand it to Kareem. Keep banging away in about every fifth play. Mix in a play action pass there or a bootleg and you're fine. Kevin Stefanski will do that. The nice thing about Kevin is that he is not, he's both smart enough and realistic enough and disciplined enough not to get caught up in trying to do statistical or sexy things. And this is one case where it's great that the head coach is the play caller because he's got a level head and he's concerned only with winning. The receivers, of course, the stellar duo from LSU, Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, OBJ, was hurt last year, but he'll probably be back this year. Donovan Peoples-Jones, kind of developed a little bit last year into a reliable guy. He's a downfield, long striding guy, but he's a pretty solid backup. Rashard Higgins is going to be backed up by Anthony Schwartz. That'll be an interesting battle. It'll be interesting to see how many wide receivers they keep. But Jarvis, as we know, does all the dirty work there is to do and is as reliable as the sun rising every morning in the East. Odell is Superman when not bothered by injury. He can do Superman things. And, you know, you probably need to put in a lot of time massaging him mentally, particularly if he's not getting a lot of balls. But he's gotten older, he's gotten more mature, too. So, this is a trio that's pretty hard to beat. Austin Hooper is an outstanding tight end, backed up by Harrison Bryant. And David Njoku is on death's doorstep literally every year. Every The first story out of Browns camp this year will be Njoku on the trading block, or Njoku in danger of missing the team. And then the son of a gun comes back, and in December, there he is making plays. He's too skinny to be a tight end. He can't block, but he's really a solid, solid receiver. And I was surprised somebody didn't make a run at him in the offseason. So they're deep at every offensive position, every skill position. Andy Jovanovic, the fullback, is darn good too. Jedrick Wills had a good year last year. The media is making him into a star. He's not there yet. He's not Anthony Munoz yet. This is the poor kid. You know, unfortunately, some talking heads saw him play well one time on television and anointed him. And now, of course, everyone else follows suit. Give him a little time to develop. He's not there yet, but he's coming. Joel Bitonio is outstanding. He's a pro bowler, should be a pro bowler every year. J.C. Treader is fine at center. Wyatt Teller's turned out to be a pretty good offensive guard. And Jack Conklin, for this team, is the right offensive tackle. Now, if they get into shootouts where they have to be in three wides and they have to throw the ball, Jack Conklin becomes a liability in pass protection. And I've said this from day one, and people in Tennessee used to throw things at me because of it. The fact is, it's true. But as long as they can play the game that Kevin Stefanski wants to play, which is give it to Nick and Kareem, Jack Conklin is terrific. So this is a team that, if they play their game, can beat anybody. Baker Mayfield made a really good transition last year from a street ball run around, always flush to the right, take chances and throw it down the field guy, into a real quarterback. Like they said, you know, Pinocchio, you're now a real boy.
Yeah, Baker, he's a real boy now.
Last year, you became a real quarterback. I think a lot of that has to do with the play calling and not putting him in positions where he gets wild and woolly. And he still flushes to the right far too many times. But if he can get the ball out, and if you have to defend the run game, then it makes him a much better quarterback. And he's growing and getting better. Can he take them all the way? I think we'll find out this year, because in the end, the formula is always the same. Great defense and great kicking game can get to the playoffs. Great run game and great defense can get you to the playoffs. But no matter what you have, the quarterback has to take you the rest of the way. And so we have two teams in this division, the Browns and the Ravens, whose quarterbacks have not proven that they can make it the rest of the way. So we're going to see which one or both gets it done this year.
Bill, in terms of looking at the rosters on paper, do you like the Browns a little better than the Ravens?
Yeah, I do. I do, because I think Baker, A, has more weapons, and B, can do more things. And the reason I say have more weapons is that in order to accommodate Lamar's running, you have to construct an offense that stresses people in the run game, but not in the pass game. With Cleveland, with those two running backs, you can go three wides, two backs, and say to a defense, go ahead, defend this. Because if you put six defensive backs in the game, hello, Nick, here we come.
Right.
Yeah.
And he might be the best back in the league, by the way. And Kareem Hunt's not far behind. And if you decide you wanna load up the box and say, I'm gonna make Baker Mayfield beat us, well, here's Odell and Jarvis and Rashad Higgins. Go ahead, try that. And we might throw Njoku in here every now and then.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They can do more things because they're more, they can stress defenses more because they're more conventional.
And their depth for a 17 game season has to be as good as anybody in the league.
Yeah,
that's true. Baltimore will build, I think, exactly right. I mean, They will do very well what they can do, but that's the thing they do. Whereas with Cleveland, whatever they need, they really have the capacity to do, depending on how you play against them. So I reluctantly agree that that Cleveland has a better roster. All right.
On defense.
Okay.
Miles Garrett's outstanding. Andrew Billings, Malik Jackson, Clowney at defensive end, backed up industry on the depth chart by Tack McKinley. So they're counting on.
You hit on one.
Yeah, right. You hit on one, you hit the jackpot. Will was listed as the weak linebacker, Anthony Walker in the middle. Sione Takitaki, who I really love. I mean, he's fun to watch. This guy loves to play football. It is, but he's fun to watch. Denzel Ward at one corner. Troy Hill steps in at the other. He'll give them solid professional play. Ronnie Harrison at safety. And as I mentioned before, John Johnson, dynamite free safety, as long as you use him correctly. And he's backed up by Grant Delpit, who had his ability, but who was injured last year. So, and Greg Newsome is backing up Troy Hill. So, you know, and Greedy Williams backs up Denzel Ward. So this is a pretty deep bunch.
It is.
Cody Parkey has to win games because this is a team that's going to be in every game and in the hunt every week. So he's got to win the games. Jamie Gillen, I like as a punter. Peoples Jones as a punt returner is not terribly exciting because he's a long strider. And I don't like long striding punt returners because you got to make the first guy miss. But if you do get him out in the open, he's dynamite. He's got enough juice to go all the way. And De'Ernest Johnson is the kick returner. So this is a defense that if they hit on Clowney and or McKinley and Hill and Denzel Ward and John Johnson, you know, step in and mesh in the secondary. This is a team that could go all the way. I'm not just talking about in division, but the whole way.
Right. And what if Wu is something we haven't seen before?
Well, you know, if Wu turns out to be something we haven't seen before, he's the antidote to Lamar. He's the Lamar killer.
And in a Super Bowl, if you're playing Tampa, he can defend some tight ends.
Yes, he can. Yes, he can. He can also do it against Lamar, too, although I wouldn't have him do it. But we now turn to the one and only Pittsburgh Steelers. And this is an interesting team. Rick, you got their numbers?
Yeah, we'll pull them up. So on offense, Bill, they were, in terms of points per game, they were 12th, averaging 26.3 a game. In combined yards per play, they were only 24th in the league at a combined average of 5.2. They were 24th also in their pass attack, which averaged 6.2 per pass attempt. And they were dead last in the running game, which averaged a dismal 3.6. They protected Big Ben well. They were first in the whole league in that, giving up only 0.8 sacks per game. On defense, they were tied for fifth in fewest points given up per game at 21.2, third in overall yards at 310. Against the pass, they were third, averaging at 6.0 per attempt, 11th. Against the run, 4.3. At first in sacks, with 3.3 against the opposition per game. Their point differential, they ranked 7th at 5.5. And their turnover margin, they were tied for 9th at a positive 0.2. So some real highlights there among a few lowlights.
Okay. There's been a lot of turnover on this team. And, you know, I don't think we really know what they're going to be at this point in time. Bud Dupree leaves and goes to Tennessee for 5 years. $35 million guaranteed. They think he's the answer, the second rusher that they needed. We'll find out if he can generate rush without J.J. Watt. We'll find out. Landry is a good rusher, but he's not J.J. But they're going to miss him nonetheless. He's a good player. Mike Hilton is only 27. He goes to Cincinnati on a four-year deal. Matt Filer, who played right tackle, goes to the Chargers on a three-year deal. Villanueva, who we mentioned before, goes to Baltimore on a two-year deal. He was a left tackle in Pittsburgh. James Conner, who you love because he's such a hard-working, hard-running guy, but injuries and illness have taken their toll. He goes to Arizona on a one-year deal. Sean Davis goes to Indianapolis on a one-year deal. And Adonai, a backup linebacker, goes to Tennessee on a one-year deal. So the big losses are Dupree, Hilton, Filer, and Villanueva, and Connor, all of whom were starters, although there are many around the league that would tell you that Filer, Villanueva, and Connor were not championship-level starters last year. Re-signed Tyson Alualu, who's up in years but pretty solid, 3-4 inside player on defense. Zach Banner at offensive tackle. Jordan Berry, the punter, on a one-year deal. Josh Dobbs on a one-year deal, an ostensible backup quarterback. Cassius Marsh on a one-year deal. He is a really good backup rusher. Can't play full-time, not good against the run, but as a backup rusher, he's really good. The biggest re-signing was Juju for 1 year at $8 million. There must be a lot of people around the league that know a heck of a lot more than I do, because I would have thought that Juju would have had a market.
Yeah, especially if Will Fuller got 1 for 10 and Sammy got 1 for 5.
Yeah.
He's not in the middle of that bracket.
Yeah.
He's north.
I agree. Cameron Sutton got 2 years at $9 million. Vince Williams, who they love, who's a very solid player, although not a difference maker, re-signed. And Chris Wormley, a defensive end, re-signed. They went outside and got Kellen Ballage, who on a one-year deal. Kellen Ballage is a slam banger. They did not have this guy last year, and I think he's going to make a difference for them. They got cornerback. They got B.J. Finney, an offensive tackle. Joe Haig, an offensive tackle. Safety Miles Killebrew, and corner Art Mallett. Ballage, I think, is the big signing there. Now, the draft fell exactly their way. They got the answer to their prayers in Najee Harris. So here we go. Ben, hand them the ball. And everything is right with the world in Pittsburgh. We're back running the ball, playing defense. Ballage will be a good addition to that group. They'll slam bang to their heart's content. Right. Pat Freiermuth is the first tight end I think they've had in a while who can do things in a passing game on his own, natural passing game talent. It's going to take him a bit to get used to the National Football League, the physicality of it and all that. But I think in the end, he's going to be a darn good addition.
The Penn Staters that go to the Steelers tend to be pretty good.
Yeah, they tend to be okay. Kendrick Green is a road grader guard from Illinois. They certainly can use him. Dan Moore is a tackle from Texas A&M. Buddy Johnson, a solid linebacker from Texas A&M. Isaiah Loudermilk is a playmaking linebacker from Wisconsin. He, in the fifth round, look for him to make the team. I think he'll show you quite a bit. Quincy Roche is the other defensive end from Miami. He's the non-pass rusher, but Miami of Florida. But he is a pretty solid player. And Trey Norwood and Presley Harvin III, a punter from Georgia, round out the draft. The keys there.
Hey, Bill, is there anything to the fact that they seem to have signed more rookies than anybody this early?
No. No, they just, get them signed. That's all.
Okay.
You know, they say the agent, Pittsburgh's front office has the following reputation. Going all the way back to the time when Mr. Rooney Sr., Art Sr., and Dan Rooney, the late Dan Rooney, were running the club before the steel, before the days of the steel curtain. They were known as one of the most player-friendly organizations in football. That has remained true to this day. But they all are also very firm in what they will pay and what they will not pay. And agents learn that at their peril.
Right.
And players learn it at their peril. So, for example, the running back from Michigan State, who Najee Harris ultimately will be the heir or is the heir apparent for, sat out essentially 2 years, thinking right. that the Roonies would give in. They don't. They don't. And so, and Kevin, their general manager, just he, you know, he's right from the Rooney tree. And so what they tell the rookies is, here's what we're offering. It's here today. You might as well take it and go buy a car and do whatever you want to do, put it in the bank. Or you can take it on the fifth day of camp. We don't care.
Right, so, whatever.
But you know, Bill, unlike some other teams that sort of behave that way, the thing about I've always felt like the offers that the Roonies were making were fair offers. It's not like they're trying to force, you know, a player below his station in terms of what he's supposed to take. It's just they make the offer and that's it. Take it or not. But it's you know, you're not unhappy playing under with that money. I mean, to me,
no. And with the draft slotted the way it is, everybody knows what everybody's supposed to get. Why wouldn't you sign early? Put the money in the bank.
Let's take the mystery
out. And the other thing is, though, I mean, Bill, you know, the Roonies were also, and I think in other ways, not just in terms of salary, but if not first, always near the top in terms of really being a pro player organization, caring about their players, dealing with them honestly, and doing their best to take care of them.
Yeah.
So it's a good place. It's a good place to play.
Hey, to that end, I know this is a little off topic. Did you see the video the Panthers put out today where they have the video from inside their draft room where they're talking to the Vikings about trading for the 8th pick?
No, I did not.
Oh, this is the weirdest thing ever. This is a must watch later today. So they put out a video. It's David Tepper, Matt Rhule, the GM. They're in a room and they're talking about the movement of the 8th pick, and they've got a camera at J.C. Horn's house, and literally you get them calling calls from Minnesota trying to move up to 8 to draft a certain quarterback from Ohio State. And I have no idea why they leaked it. And I'm wondering if this is the sort of death of the inside facility as we know it.
Well, it just goes to show you why cameras should not be in the draft room. Media people should not be in the draft room. They should be locked in a closet with handcuffs on.
Right.
ESPN should not be in the draft room as an example of Howie Roseman, an Eagle employee, people reading body language and
into fist bumps.
You know, we would. Jim Irsay, when ESPN came knocking on the door asking to put a camera in our draft room, Jim Irsay said, what would you think about it? I said, no, 1,000 times no. And so he was having fun with me. He said jokingly, what would you do if I ordered you to do it? I said, I'd go down the hall into the washroom closet and we'd go in there and make the choices in there. I'll take the calls in right. there.
Yeah, when I saw it today, I thought, oh, Bill would have done this from his car.
That's exactly
Scott,
right.
Are you saying that
and Jim
somebody
laughed. He said, I knew that's exactly what you would say.
It's the craziest video because literally they have Devin Tepper, the owner, is saying to the Matt Rhule and these guys, well, hang up on him. We're not taking any more. And you literally get the call from Minnesota where they offered their second and their third and their first to get up from 14 to 8 to take Justin Fields. And why the Panthers released this, I have no idea.
Actually, the Panthers as their organization did release it. It wasn't just a leak that somebody put up there.
To the best of my knowledge, the Panthers released it. It looked like they were filming it on purpose.
Was Tepper actively orchestrating the trade?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you've got to watch this later today, Bill.
That's weird.
Sidebar there. Didn't know if you had seen it.
I had not. Okay, let's go to the depth chart. Again, we'll leave Big Ben for last. Najee Harris, Benny Snell, who's been a bit of a disappointment. I thought Benny Snell would be much more of a slam banger than he's turned out to be. Anthony McFarland, who's a solid third down back. And I said Ballage, I think, will help out here. But Najee Harris is the answer. Juju, Deontay Johnson, for my money, I know they believe in him. I hope they're right. I wouldn't put a penny on it. I don't see – there's not enough consistency here to make me jump up and down with him. I think Juju is a far better receiver than he, but that's just me. And Chase Claypool is a big power receiver who's turned into a really good receiver. He's always going to be a big power receiver, but there's a place for him in modern-day football because unlike Devin Funchess and company, he doesn't run 4.7. He runs 4.39. So – guy, big power receivers who can run, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
I think Freiermuth surpasses Ebron before the season's half over. Derek Watt, pretty sound fullback. Okorafor at left tackle, I thought did a pretty good job last year. Dotson, Kendrick Green, DeCastro, who did not have a great year last year. And Zach Banner, who's coming off injury, make up the offensive line. Now, it is unfair. They changed the offensive line coaches, clearly. But it's kind of unfair to point the finger at a coach because it's like the old, there's an old saying, how are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris?
Yep.
After you've been coached by Mike Munchak, it's all downhill. It's unfair to compare what, a young or growing coach could do compared with what Munch can do. Munch creates miracles. So this is a line that's going to have to grow and get better. New coach, new system, new techniques. But they got a young and developing offensive line's best friend is a running back who can do marvelous things. And they have one in Najee Harris. So I think the run game will be fine. The reason that they had so few sacks last year was because Ben was getting the ball out quicker than anybody in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And they were throwing 3 and 4 yard passes just to make sure that Ben wasn't going to get sacked. My question is, can he continue to play at a high level? Can he avoid injury? Has he still got the Big Ben magic? I had my doubts in the playoffs. It was almost as though you said, boy, oh boy, what a sad way to end the season for a great player and a great franchise. I hope that's not the case. I hope he bounces back. But it's a big question mark. And I don't think Mason Rudolph or Josh Dobbs or Dwayne Hankins are the answer.
Bill, what did you think about his play after the early run, but in sort of the last quarter of the season? What did you see the same thing as you saw in the playoffs, or was that a problem?
Yeah, it was trending down from midseason on. It was from 11-0, I guess. It was trending down from there.
And that it was.
Well, and then they ran into the football team buzzsaw.
True.
Yeah. I've read that many places, Scott.
The opposition got better, but by that time there was no running game. James Conner was all beaten up. As I said, Snell didn't turn out to be what I thought he would be and what they thought he would be. And the passing game was inconsistent because Johnson couldn't get open and catch the ball on a consistent basis. Claypool, you know, people were double teaming, and in truth, Juju disappeared in some games. But and Ebron, you know, was just there. He just a guy. So there wasn't a lot of weaponry, but Ben knew that he didn't have a lot of protection either. So he was getting it out quick, and that's easy to defend. On defense, I mean, this team is always going to be defensive-oriented to begin with. They're going to make their money with defense in the running game. If you have Big Ben, wonderful. But if not, you do it with Slash or others. You know, this is a defensive franchise, and it should be. So in Stephon Tuitt, Tyson Alualo, and Cameron Hayward, they have the best 3-4 front in the league, even though they're getting on in years a little bit. Tuitt is still young, but Alualo and Cam are getting on in years. T.J. Watt is the best rushing outside linebacker in football. Vince Williams is solid inside. The downturn last year
was Bush.
Was Bush. Yes, once Bush was hurt, that's the end of it, because that position in the defense is the playmaker. That's the guy who makes everything else go, because he can cover, he can rush, he can play the run, he can run down plays inside out. Without him, they just were a shell of what they were defensively, as they were when his predecessor went down with that tragic injury. Before he was hurt, I'm drawing a blank on the name right now. Ryan Shazier from Ohio State. Before, I darn near teared up. I was doing the game when Ryan Shazier got hurt. That team was so much better than New England that year defensively. It wasn't even close. And when Shazier got hurt, there went their chances for the Super Bowl. And it was, you know, when you see a guy that great a player go down, boy, it's hard to take. And he took the team with him. Alex Highsmith, I think, has a chance to be pretty good. They do too. They put him in the lineup. He played well as a rookie out of UNC Charlotte, but then got nicked. So he's going to have to fight through that the physicality of the NFL. But if he can, I think he's a good player. Joe Hayden, when they picked him up from the Browns, they repatriated him from the old Browns, which was a a slag heap. On the Cuyahoga River, and he came over and became the Joe Hayden of old, and made a real difference. Terrell Edmonds, I don't think they think that he's lived up to what they thought he would be, but I think there's still a lot there to like. I don't see him every day like they do, and so they're obviously right, but they didn't. I don't believe they picked up his fifth year option, but I think there's still something to work with there. Micah Fitzpatrick was a phenomenal trade by Kevin. They brought him in there. He was languishing somewhere else.
Miami,
not getting anything done, and he's the missing piece in the puzzle. He comes in and he's intercepting the ball and doing all the wonderful things he did when he was at Alabama. And Cameron Sutton has turned out to be a damn good corner. The backup guys, Shakir Brown, Killebrew, Antoine Brooks, Justin Lane, I don't see a fifth corner there that says this can be a stellar Pittsburgh of old, nor do I see, besides Spillane and maybe Quincy Roche, of course, Cassius Smart not a full-time player, but a backup is fine. There's not as much depth here as there is in Cleveland. So if they get any injuries, that's a problem. Chris Boswell, really good place kicker. Harvin's, I think will turn into a solid punter. And Jordan Berry is going to fight him for the job. Deontay Johnson's a decent punt returner, and McFarland's a decent kickoff returner. Ray McLeod ends up, if McFarland has to play a lot, Ray McLeod winds up as the dual return man. He's okay. I think this team has to stay healthy defensively, and the run game has to develop enough that they don't have to rely on Ben to go back there in the three wides and throw it on every down as they were doing over the last third of last season and through the playoffs. If they can get back to playing Steeler football and stay healthy on defense, then I think they got a chance.
If Bush is upright, this is not a fun team to play in the playoffs.
No, absolutely not. But they got to get to the playoffs, and that's the key.
Yeah,
they do. All right, let's get on the caboose and head to Cincinnati.
Okay, I was going to say woo-woo, but that would have a different connotation in this show. Right, exactly. Okay, so we're going out to Cincinnati. Obviously, a tough year for them last year. On offense, they were 29th in the league, averaging 19.4 points a game. In terms of the combined yards, they were 30th, under 4.9, not even, and that's combined passing and running. Their passing yards, they were 28th at 5.9. They were a little bit better on the rush. They were tied for 23rd, but still only at 4.1. They were 27th. In terms of sacks given up, at averaging 3 a game. On the defensive side of the ball, the numbers don't improve. They were 21st in the league in points allowed, almost 27. In combined yards, they were 26th at 390. In passing yards allowed, they were tied for 21st, giving up 7.1 a pass. Against the run, they were 31st. At 5.1, they were next to last in sacks recorded at only 1.1 a game. They were 28th in the league in point differential at -7.1, and their turnover margin, they were 25th at a -0.4. Well, not much, Bill. Tell us what you can.
Well, here's the thing. Go back over those offensive and defensive team statistics and just read out the rankings.
Okay. Exactly. 29, 30, 28, 23, 27. That's an offense, defense, 21st, 26th, 21st, and 31st. 31st, 28th, and 27th.
There you go.
Well, you know, that's what I say. This is, I'm hoping you can tap dance this part of the program, Bill.
This is going to be a rough year again in Cincinnati, right?
Well, here's the thing. I think the one thing you have to do when you analyze teams, whether you're running a team or you're just doing it, what we're doing it here for information purposes, is be very open and honest about what the team is. Those numbers were across the board abysmal. Now, Joe Burrow played, what, 6 good games before he was hurt?
Yeah, and a really good half.
And a really good half, yeah. And so because he was a story, the media created the fiction that this was a good team that, oh, if only Joe Burrow didn't get hurt, they would have been pretty good. That's fiction. Joe Burrow got hurt because their offensive line was lousy and couldn't protect him. And then everything else went to hell, as it should have, because they didn't have very good players. So we're going to talk about a lot of guys that left. Maybe they left for good reason, maybe not. But Carl Lawson, decent rush guy, power rusher, 26 years of age, gets $45 million for 3, 30 guaranteed with the Jets. What do the Jets know that the Bengals didn't?
Right.
William Jackson, first round draft choice, solid man-to-man corner, gets 40 for 3, 26 guaranteed with the Washington football team. They think he's an upgrade over Darby. What do they know that the Browns don't? I'm sorry, that the Bengals don't.
I'm saying we know a lot.
AJ Green, abject failure for the last 2 years. Never got on the field. Got a one-year deal at $6 million from Arizona. John Ross, one-year deal at $2.250. John Ross hasn't been on the field. I'll bet he hasn't been on the field for a full game.
But, Bill, he can really take the top off.
I know that.
No, I was saying that as a joke. Bill, I was joking. Bill, I'm joking.
I'm joking with you. I know that you could take the top off, but you have to be on the field to do it. You're not allowed to do it from IR. You have to do it on the field.
Because, Scott, what's the most important ability?
Is taking the top off ability or availability.
Availability. Yeah, all right.
I didn't think Randy Bullock was a terrible kicker. Apparently needed to Detroit because they gave him a job. But, you know, what do they know that that Cincinnati didn't? Giovanni Bernard, I said last week, was already the steal of the offseason as a third down back. He's not an every down back. He's a solid third down back, 30 years of age, great pickup for a contender. Sean Williams goes to Arizona on a one-year deal. Bobby Hart goes to Buffalo as a backup on a one-year deal. Mackenzie Alexander goes to Minnesota on a one-year deal. B.J. Finney goes to Pittsburgh on a one-year deal. So there's a lot of moving parts here, none of which in the end were very good. So we'll find out whether Carl Lawson was or was not a big loss, whether William Jackson was or was not a big loss. A.J. Green and John Ross were not. So I'm not criticizing the Browns. They probably did need to turn over a lot of people. But Joe Burrow wasn't going to make that crew any better than they already are.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
The re-signs were Brandon Allen as a backup, Tony Brown corner, Mike Daniels linebacker, Jordan Evans, punter Kevin Huber, running back Samaje Perine, who's probably in the end a good solid number two, but he's not as good as Giovanni Bernard in the passing game. But he is a good slam bang runner.
And a huge fan of the National Zoo.
Huh, interesting.
I would see Samaje at the zoo almost every weekend.
All right.
Did he have a particular animal that he preferred?
I won't get into that, right. But he's an avid lover of the zoo, which is good enough.
All right, okay.
Quentin Spain, you know, good road grader guard, not the Mike Thomas, the other Mike Thomas, as a wide receiver for 1 year, and Brandon Wilson, they re-signed. Signed in free agency, Ricardo Allen at safety. Eli Apple, oh. I mean, I know he's an Ohio State guy, and I know they love Ohio State guys, but, you know, I don't see it.
This just didn't work. We know it didn't work.
Chidobe Awuzie, I really like. They signed him for 3 years, but he's a cover two corner. So are they going to play cover two? Are they going to play Tampa two? If they are, Chidobe is a really good pickup. If they're going to play anything that resembles what they played in Dallas, he can't. So we'll see. I love the player, but it was a kind of a scratch your head. How are you going to use him? Trey Hendrickson replaces the dearly departed Kirk Lawson, and he is a try hard, high motor, good player. Who's not a natural rusher, not a natural rusher. He's not naturally slippery, but he's a good, solid, try-hard player, and he's younger than Lawson. So, okay, 4 years, $60 million. That's rare for the Bengals to do that. Mike Hilton, a good pickup, 4 years. Rare again for them to do that. Ogunjobi, as I said earlier, I really like. He's an active defensive tackle. He, too, is much more of a Tampa 2 defensive tackle than, you know, what they've played with in the past. So maybe they are thinking more of Tampa 2 because he and and Owuzie are really Tampa 2 players. So maybe they could play a lot more of that.
And could Trey be like a Chad Bratsky in that kind of defense?
Yeah, that's exactly who he is. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Riley Reiff comes over to play offensive tackle for 1 year. Riley is a journeyman player who's a good, solid player. And they add Trent Taylor for 1 year at receiver. So, you know, I like the free agent moves except for Eli Apple. Eli Apple's problem is that he's never learned to play with his feet. He plays with his hands and gets a lot of penalties and makes a lot of mistakes. But maybe they feel like they can straighten him out. The others are all, they give them credit. They got rid of a lot of players who didn't perform and spent a lot of money to bring in players who have a chance to perform. So you have to like what they're doing. My criticism of is not of the Brown family or the Bengals executives. It's of the media who anointed them as an up-and-coming team because Joe Burrow had a couple of good games. they are not. This year may be the year where they do make some strides. In the draft, they got Ja'Marr Chase, who's a very solid, multi-talented receiver. The best thing he does is run after the catch and catch the ball. Those are two great attributes. He's not a blazer, but he did play with Burrow at LSU, so that gives him a comfort zone, and I'm sure Burrow stood on the table for him.
Hey, Bill, totally hypothetical. If you had the same grade on Ja'Marr Chase and Sewell, the tackle from Oregon, who would you have taken?
Chase. Yeah. Because in the immortal words of Whitey Duval, the late great personnel director for the Kansas City Chiefs, the tackle's only going to block one guy. Ja'Marr Chase is going to score touchdowns with the ball in his hand.
Right.
So I understand the importance of the left tackle, but I would have taken Chase. Again, the Book of Dungy / Polian, when you're in the top 10, you take a guy who scores touchdowns. You take a guy who throws touchdowns. You take a guy who intercepts the ball and stops touchdowns. You take a guy who sacks the quarterback. And in the court of last resort, you take a left tackle. Not to say that's right, but that's what we believed in.
Yeah. No.
Joseph Osai is a linebacker from Texas. My question is he's an outside linebacker and a pass rusher. Is he fast enough? Is he fast enough? Can he turn speed into power? He's got some pass rush ability. Don't know if he's fast enough. We'll find out. Cameron Sample, defensive end from Tulane. Interesting guy. Tyler Shelvin, defensive tackle from Louisiana State in the fourth round. Dante Smith, offensive tackle from East Carolina in the fourth round. All developing players. Evan McPherson, the kicker from Florida, they drafted in the fifth round, so they must think he's the guy because they sent Frolick on his way. And so we'll find out. Typically, drafted kickers don't do well. They do well on their second time around. But we'll see. We'll find out. Trey Hill, good solid center from Georgia. Chris Evans, solid but not spectacular running back from Michigan. And Wyatt Hubert, defensive end from Kansas State, rounds out the draft. So, you know, Chase, if Carmen can come in and play tackle at an acceptable level and Osai can provide rush ability, then they've had a good draft. If not, if Cameron and Osai don't become major contributors, it's probably not enough to get them over the top. Depth chart offense. Joe Burrow, solid player, only going to get better. Joe Mixon, solid player, verging on the spectacular at times. Samaje Perine, solid backup. Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, journeyman players, good players. T. Higgins is getting better. I think he has a chance to be pretty good. Ja'Marr Chase makes that a a receiving core that you have to worry about. Drew Sample is, you know, journeyman tight end. Jonah Williams, Xavier Suafilo, Trey Hopkins, Carmen Jackson, Jackson Carmen, and Riley Reiff, newcomers at right guard and right tackle. You know, I'm not sure Jonah Williams is the answer at left tackle, but we'll find out. Riley Reiff at right tackle will be a solid journeyman player. He's not spectacular, but he'll get the job done. I don't know why you draft a guard in the second round, but that's neither here nor there. Go ahead and do what you want. On defense, Sam Hubbard, I don't know if Sam Hubbard's slightly better than a journeyman or an emerging guy. I think we're going to find out this year. DJ Reader is a solid inside run player. Larry Okunjobi, as I said before, really good movement player. And Trey Hendrickson, they're listing Osai as a defensive end, by the way, which he might be if he's fast enough. The linebackers are just guys, Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt, Akeem Davis-Gaither. But you don't live and die with linebackers, especially in this division. Trey Waynes plays hot and cold. I thought he would be a star. He just hasn't quite developed into that. There are good days and bad days. Von Bell, you know, really a pretty solid safety.
He's also part of the Ohio State ticket selling program at the Bengals.
Jesse Bates is the best player nobody knows in the secondary. He's really outstanding. Ricardo Allen will back him up. And they're going to have Chidobe Awuzie at right corner. Mike Hilton probably ends up being the nickel. Maybe Eli Apple makes a comeback. He's back in his native state. We'll find out. I think it's a middle-of-the-road defense. If Hendrickson can emerge as a difference maker, if Bates continues to grow, if Waynes can play consistently and Awuzie can play consistently, I think they have a chance to be better than they were, but what they were was nowhere near good enough, nor has it been for the last 3 years. We talked about the offense. I think the key here is protecting Burrow, and I don't know if they can do it. That we'll see. He's the franchise. He's already been hurt once. You could make an argument that you should have drafted the tackle to do that. They think Jonah Williams is fine. We'll find out.
Yeah, we've unfortunately seen that movie before in Cincinnati.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
So I think it's on a loop there.
It is. All right. Well, that is our show for today. Our run through the AFC North. As always, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Bet Online. If you have any questions or things you want us to cover in the show, hit us up on Twitter at IFBillPolian. We stay in the North next week and go to a division that's got a little bit of controversy in it, the NFC North. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay safe and stay well, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.